You're listening to The Conversation with Adam Weber, lead pastor of Embrace Church and author of Love Has a Name.
Hey friends, it's Adam. This is The Conversation. I hope and pray this finds every last one of you doing well. Hey, today's episode is a powerful, powerful episode that I'm pumped for all of you to hear. But before we get to that though, I want to share a quick word. Right now, I am personally reading through the book of Acts, which is an amazing book of the Bible. If you've never read the book of Acts, it's basically the story of this new baby church and how it begins to grow and spread the name of Jesus all over the world. It's an exciting book of the Bible to read, but one of the main characters in the book of Acts is a guy named Paul, and God has radically changed Paul from the inside out. And throughout the book of Acts, God begins to work in and through Paul in amazing ways. But what has struck me recently as I've been reading is how often Paul shares his story with other people. Like any chance that Paul has an opportunity to do so, he begins to share about how God has radically changed his life. Whether it's just one person, whether it's a group of people, every time that Paul has an opportunity, he just shares his story. Not in an argumentative way, not in a pushy way. Instead, he just simply shares what Jesus has done in and through his life. And so I just want to ask the question, when was the last time that we shared our story with the people around us? Now, I know that not all of you are Christians who are listening. Not all of you are believers. And that's a huge honor that you listen in, if that's you. And so maybe this is a word specifically for Christians, but I just want to ask, when was the last time that you shared a part of your God story with your friend, with your coworker, with your neighbor? Not in an argumentative way, not in a pushy way, but when someone asked about who you are and where you've come from and what your life is all about, when was the last time that you just shared about how Jesus has radically changed you from the inside out? You're still a work in progress. Absolutely. You're not this perfect holy angel, but when was the last time that you just shared, hey, this is who I was, I met Jesus, and now this is who I am. I want to encourage you within the next week, maybe even more specifically, within the next 24 hours, I want to encourage you to share a part of your God story with someone in your life who needs to hear about Jesus. That's my word of encouragement. In today's episode, I sat down with author, counselor, licensed therapist, Deborah Folletta. We had a powerful conversation about, are you okay? We talked about things like panic attacks, why and when you should see a counselor. I know that this is going to be an episode that encourages you. As always, sit back, relax, and enjoy this conversation. Well, Deborah, I'm super excited to sit down with you. I want to welcome you to the conversation today.
Thank you so much for having me, Adam. I'm excited.
I'm excited about it as well. For the person who does not know you, give us the high points of who you are and where you've been in focuses and that kind of thing.
Yeah. So I am a licensed professional counselor. Years ago, I started a website called truelovedates.com to kind of market my very first book about dating and relationships. And little did I know that God had much bigger plans for that little blog than I could ever imagine. So that's kind of turned into a full-fledged ministry where I give advice, relationship advice that's kind of turned into mental health and emotional health advice. And I'm a mother of four kids and the wife to my amazing husband. And it's kind of funny because last time we talked, I was pregnant.
You were.
With our number four surprise quarantine baby. And he's now 3 months old. So our youngest is three, our oldest is 10.
I love your title is relationship expert. I'm an expert at nothing, let alone relationships. I wish I could call myself a relationship expert.
Oh, just choose something, you know, tacos, choose whatever you want to be an expert in, you know?
That's perfect. So your newest book, it's just released. Are You Really Okay? Tell us the heart behind it, where it came from. What's your big hope and takeaway?
You know, as a licensed counselor and especially someone who's passionate about relationships, I always say that healthy people make healthy relationships.
Yes.
But the problem is we need to step back. If we really want healthy relationships, we need to stop looking at the relationship and start looking at how healthy we are standing alone. And especially after this past year, 2020 was crazy. It was like the year of exposure. It brought up so much junk for so many people. But 2021 can really be the year of healing if we'll be intentional in how we use this year. And that's really my hope for this message. It's not just a message of healing for my clients. It's a message of healing for everyone, including myself.
Yeah, that definitely sounds like a book we all need to read. I, in response to the basic question that we ask every person we run into is, how are you doing?
Yeah, how are you?
And as a South Dakotan, you have to answer that positively. Like, you can't actually share anything more than that because we're too stoic here and don't really put our emotions out there. And so oftentimes it's good, it's great, it's fantastic. It's busy, but it's good. And yet so often, I actually had a friend of mine tell me the other day, he said, if we were more honest, we should ask ourselves, like ask each other the question, how bad are you? He said, he's like, I feel
so
like,
true.
He said, I feel like people are so broken. He's like, I feel like that'd be a much better, like more honest.
A much more realistic question. And that's why I called this book, Are You Really Okay? There's a little bit of like sarcasm there of like, really? Are you really okay? Because I don't want to just hear this basic superficial answer. I want us to really dig deep. The thing is, just because we're Christians doesn't mean we're healthy. And I think a lot of times we make that assumption that when we come to Jesus, we're going to be healthy emotionally, spiritually, mentally, but we don't make that assumption with our physical health. We don't assume that when we become a Christian, all of a sudden our cholesterol levels are going to be just right, our blood pressure, our BMI. But why then do we assume that we're going to be okay mentally, emotionally? Why do we assume that we don't have to be intentional about doing that work? And that's what I'm trying to kind of help people see and maybe dig a little deeper.
Yeah, that's such a good point. We would never assume that about other areas. So that question, how do we begin to answer that question honestly, not just with others, but with ourselves?
Well, I love to tackle things in pieces. And when Jesus calls us to love him with our heart, soul, mind, and strength, heart represents emotional health, soul, spiritual health, mind, mental health, and strength is our physical health.
Yeah.
So when we're called to love God, heart, soul, mind, and strength, we shouldn't be surprised when the enemy tries to fight us, battle us in those areas. Instead, we should be prepared for it. And so when we're talking about getting healthy, we're talking about this holistic experience. And so I break up the book, Are You Really Okay? Into four sections: emotional health, spiritual health, mental health, and physical health. And each section kind of forces you to do a little bit of a checkup. You know, you go to the doctor for your annual checkup, but how often do you stop and do an emotional checkup?
Check
how you're doing emotionally, mentally. You know what I'm saying? So really it starts with us making the time and space to stop and have some insight, to look in and ask ourselves some hard questions about how we're actually doing.
Yeah. I was just going to get to that. What are practical questions? I think specifically for men, I'm kind of stereotyping here, but men who are not good at processing their emotions. How do I even start that?
You know, I love that you just stereotyped.
Because yeah. I just feel like if I'm sitting with a guy, he's like, I don't have feelings. You know,
well, here's the thing about it, Adam. I think you're right. A lot of people assume this is a gender thing,
yes.
But let's just stop and talk about emotional health for a minute.
That's good.
Emotional health isn't something you're born knowing how to do. It's something you learn along the way. And when we talk about emotional health, we're talking about three parts. We're talking about acknowledging our emotions. We're talking about expressing our emotions, and we're talking about questioning our emotions, making sure that we don't just trust them blindly. When we look at Jesus in scripture, scholars have identified over 39 emotions that Jesus experienced through scripture.
Whoa.
I did a deep dive study into the emotions of Jesus in one of the first chapters of this book. And I was just dumbfounded to see how many emotions he actually expressed experienced and dealt with. So this can't be a gender thing because Jesus himself was able to tap into that part of him.
Yes.
And if you think, well, Jesus was God, so you're not buying it, look at King David and look at the Psalms and all the emotions that he expressed. I think sometimes it becomes a gender thing because we're not expected to push ourselves in this area. So when I'm working with men and women alike, we have the same emotional capacity. It's just a matter of doing the work to get down there, figuring out how you feel. Human beings are like a volcano, Adam. We've got so much stuff bubbling underneath the surface, so much pressure, whether that's insecurities, fears, worries, doubts, frustration. But we have to understand that it's not just the bad stuff that causes that emotional pressure. Good things, being too busy with life and preaching and traveling,
yes,
and family and schedule, even good things can cause that buildup of emotional pressure. And what happens when there's too much pressure? Well, just like a volcano, it will find the point of least resistance and you will find yourself dealing with an emotional explosion. For different people, that looks different. For me, it happened in the form of a panic attack. For other people that I work with, it's depression, withdrawal, isolation, anger, relationship conflict. But that's the key. We've got to really get real about what's happening underneath the surface and deal with it in a healthy way.
Oh, that's so good. I was just going to bring up anger, which is an emotion that I feel like we're seeing all over the place for good reasons and bad reasons. There's just a lot of anger right now. And I think the easy way is just to be like, well, I'm just an angry person. And I think it takes more than that to say, but like, what's underneath this anger? Like, am I really just angry? Or is that how I'm expressing sadness? Or
right.
Is that how I'm expressing shame or regret? Because oftentimes it might lead with anger, and yet it's like, actually, you're scared out of your mind is why.
100%. And one of the things I teach you through this book is that anger is actually a secondary emotion because it's one of the easiest emotions to express.
Yes,
right?
That's so good.
The feeling of power and control. But like you said, there is something more vulnerable. There is a more vulnerable emotion happening underneath that we haven't tapped into. And what is that? It's usually something like insecurity, embarrassment, fear, worry, regret. And it's a lot more vulnerable to get to that place, but it's a lot more healing when we can get to the root of that anger.
Yeah, that's so good. As a pastor, something that I've shared quite a bit about, and it's just been something that God's had me on, we tend to separate our emotions from our relationship with God. And so it's possible to be kind of spiritually like informed and educated while being like emotionally still really immature and young.
Yes.
And we want to separate those two. So it's like, I love Jesus, I know all these Bible verses, but I'm still really, really angry. Or I'm really,
right,
really bitter, or I'm really, really, yes, defensive. And it's like, well, those things aren't of Jesus. And so instead of like really dealing with our emotions, we tend to separate them as like, well, that's not really spiritual. And it's like, no, actually all parts of who we are, just like you talked about those four parts, they're all impacting our relationship with God and what it looks like to love him and love others. And that for me over the last few years has been a really aha moment of, no, God wants to process all those things. He wants us to deal with our emotions and really to process our good, bad, and otherwise with him. And Christians are not good at doing that.
You're right. You're right. And I think sometimes we focus so much on the present, what's happening in the present, the struggles we're having in the here and now, instead of really digging deep and getting to the roots of those things. Even some of our current emotional struggles can be rooted in past wounds, past pain, past things that we haven't dealt with, and they're coming back up. It's kind of like a weed. When you try to just snip the top of the weed or just pull it from the top, but you're not getting to the root, it's going to keep coming back.
Yeah, that's so good. So I know in the book you talk about a traumatic experience that you walk through yourself. If you are willing to share about that, Deborah, and how that impacted you maybe negatively at first, and then how were you able and maybe continuing to do that? Like share that if you would.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, therapists aren't immune to mental health struggles, pastors aren't immune to spiritual struggles and doctors aren't immune to physical struggles. And I think it shocks people to know that I went through my own journey, but it shouldn't, because we're all susceptible. Yes. And for me, what it looked like was a series of things. I mean, I don't even know where to begin. I could talk about the past. I could talk about so many different things. But when it came to a head, about 5 years ago, I went through a traumatic miscarriage. I went in for a routine appointment only to find out that I had lost the baby. And then within minutes, I started hemorrhaging. Wow. So a routine appointment turned into a miscarriage, turned into me almost losing my life within just minutes. I was rushed to emergency surgery. And then, you know, you're left to kind of process all of these losses. But you go home, you have kids, you have a job, you have a life. So you kind of get back into the swing of things without taking the proper time. It's not like I avoided it or ignored it. I processed a little bit. I understood the loss. I talked with people. But when it comes to trauma, many times when you've experienced trauma, what ends up happening is it doesn't affect you right away because your body is in survival mode. Whoa. Think of a soldier who goes off to war. They're not experiencing the symptoms of trauma on the battlefield. It's when they go home and life is safe and secure that that trauma begins to surface. And that's exactly what happened for me. Wow. A few years later, when life was safe and secure, I found myself, my body physically reacting, having these episodes of anxiety and panic attacks that seemingly came out of nowhere. But it's because I hadn't identified the root and my body was experiencing some of the same physical symptoms that I had during that time and associating it with that. And so my body was false alarming. You know, what's happening when you're going through an anxiety attack is that your alarm system is kind of like a fire alarm. That's like danger, danger, danger. But really, there's no fire, you know, and so your body reacts to that. It's a fight or flight response and it affects everything. So a panic attack is really a physical manifestation of underlying emotional distress. And that's what was happening with me at the time. Wow. So as you can imagine, here I am, a therapist. I tell people to go to therapy. I'm all about taking medication when you need to. And now it was my turn. I needed to engage in the process of therapy to face my trauma, to get on medication for a season of my life so that I could recalibrate and deal with all of those wounds that I hadn't fully dealt with.
No, I'm so grateful that you're willing to share that part with us. The first time I went to a counseling office, there was four people from my church in the waiting room with me. It was a little bit of a humbling, borderline humiliating situation. And yet like it was so important for me to do so as well. And Deborah, so for the person who has experienced trauma, which I find so many people have, whether it's coming across a car accident, whether it's whether it's a miscarriage, whether it was something they saw their parents go through, something that was said or done, like military service, like there's so like, it can look so many different ways. What's a step I can take if I know that there's something that I've been through that is impacting me?
First of all, trauma comes to take the story of our life. Imagine your story, the story of your life in a couple pages of a book. Trauma is like a big black marker. And it comes to scribble all over that story. Ugh. That's how I describe trauma. And now for us to deal with it, it's the process of sorting through what is trauma and what is truth. Where is God's truth in this? And what can I do with this pain and these hurts? How can I redeem this tragedy? And that's the process of trauma. Counseling is so important, Adam, because it helps us engage in that process. Somebody who is a trained professional that can walk alongside of you. But I think in the church today, we see counseling like going to the doctor when you're sick. Nobody wants to do that, right? It's like, I don't even want to admit that I'm sick.
Yes.
But we need to start reframing our perspective. We need to start seeing counseling kind of like we would see going to the gym. I am going to strengthen my mental and emotional muscles. This is preventative. This is making me strong. Nobody shames you for going to the gym. They give you a high five. Good job, Adam. Yes. You're staying on top yes. of it, you know, staying fit, staying healthy. Can you imagine if we could begin reframing that in the church? We are going to get healthy. We are going to get strong. We are going to stay on top of it so that we can do all that God has called us to do. I feel like that perspective could really change our yes. approach to counseling and healing.
Yeah, that is so, so good. For the person who doesn't understand what a panic attack is like, that yeah. maybe is like, have I had one of those? Can you explain that part of things?
Panic attacks, like I said, are a physical manifestation of emotional distress. Usually it feels like you're dying when really it's an emotional response. But things that you could experience are shortness of breath, feeling like you can't breathe, like something heavy is on your chest, maybe feeling like you're sweating. You could even feel tingling in your body. You might not be able to focus. You could feel dizzy. You can feel like your body is heating up. So there's all of these different physical things that happen to you, and you literally could feel like you're going to pass out, like something is wrong. You go to the emergency room. Usually what happens in a panic attack, the first thing is you go to the emergency room because you feel like something's happening.
Yeah.
You get there, they do a full workup, and they're like, can't find anything. Whoa. And that's so frustrating because you want them to find something. You want to validate that this is a physical thing. And let me tell you, it is a real physical response. It's just a physical response to underlying, unaddressed, unexpressed emotions.
Just one last question on that. Do you think if a person's had a panic attack that they clearly know, like, yep, that is a panic attack? Do you feel like that's something that like, Yep, that's exactly what that was? Or is that wishy-washy sometimes?
I think sometimes people have no clue what it is. I would even say I knew what a panic attack looked like, and I didn't even recognize it the first time around.
Whoa.
The first time around, I could have sworn something was wrong with my body. I could have sworn I was going to die, but I wasn't. It was literally anxiety-induced, and I wasn't able to see it then. You know, you want to blame everything else.
Yeah.
You want to look around and what could this be? My blood sugar, this or that. And it's important to look at everything else.
Yep.
But when you get to the end of the line and you realize, wait a second, the one thing I haven't addressed is my emotions, my emotional response. What is going on underneath the surface, you know?
Yeah.
And you'll find it's a panic attack does come with anxiety. But you don't realize anxiety has that much power until you get to that dark and difficult point in your life.
Thank you for answering that. Because I think a lot of times we hear things, words like panic attacks, and it's like, what is that exactly? Even, you know, anxiety, like, do I have anxiety? Do I not? Depression, like, is this depression or just a bad day? And so thank you for asking that. I want to get to one last thing that I think has been so powerful in my own life. You talked about kind of preventative, like, maintenance, and there's different things we can do, counseling. But another thing that I feel like hasn't been talked about a ton, even in the last year and a half, is the importance of caring for our physical selves.
Yes.
You know, we've actually talked a lot about like health and wearing masks and that kind of thing, but we haven't talked about as much of like, gosh, exercise, getting outside and going on walks. Like, those are things that I'm like, we need to be talking about this. This is so important. Just like I feel like I can't talk about counseling enough. It's the same thing with that. How does our physical self impact us mentally and emotionally?
Well, the fourth section of the book is all about your physical health. And I talk about things from, you know, boundaries to your schedule to saying no to things. But I also talk about actual physical exercises, diet, nutrition.
So good.
They did a study with people who are struggling with clinical depression. A group of them had to walk 20 minutes a day. The other group, the control group, did not. And they showed a significant decrease in depressive symptoms that lasted for over 1 year in the group that took daily walks.
Whoa.
That just goes to show you, when you start moving your body, what you're doing is you're helping your body absorb serotonin and dopamine. Those are the chemicals that regulate your mood and help you to feel good. Those are the chemicals that fight against the cortisol, which is the stress chemical in your body. And so all of these things make you healthier as a whole.
Yes.
The body-mind connection is something that can't be ignored, even when it comes to things like sleep. How well are you sleeping? And in the book, I talk a little bit about sleep hygiene. And my editor wrote back to me. She's like, is that an actual word?
Are you making stuff up? Yeah.
It is an actual word. Sleep hygiene. Like the way that you take care of yourself before bed, because your sleep is an integral part to your health. And vice versa, when you're not sleeping well, you're not going to be mentally well. When you're not mentally well, you're probably going to find signs in your sleep that you're not doing so hot. You're waking up earlier than you want. You're not able to sleep as quickly. You're getting up multiple times and not being able to fall back asleep, because it's all interrelated. When we see a problem with one, it's like the check engine light that reminds us something is going on. I need to stop and take this time to really dig deep and figure out how I'm doing. And so that's why it's important to be aware of all of these things.
Yeah, this is, again, something that in the church and as Christians, you really don't hear ever mentioned. Like, yeah, it's like, gosh, the simple things sometimes of going on walks and caring for ourselves and feeling good about how we even look in the mirror at times in a healthy way, it vitally impacts who we are.
Yes, it all goes together. You're absolutely right. And I think that's why we have to kind of see this as, you know, these four different stops. I can't just stay here with my physical health and not focus on anything else.
Yep.
I can't just stay here with my spiritual health and not focus on anything else. Like we have to make
yes.
the rounds and do the checkups and truly pursue holistic health, heart, soul, mind, and strength, so that we can love God in the way that He's called us to love, so that we can serve in the way that He's called us to serve.
Deborah, I feel like we could talk forever. I going into this conversation, I'm like, I have enough questions for hours worth of content. So even more, I want to encourage anybody listening to me right now, go get a copy of this book. Are You Really Okay? Deborah, again, just thank you so much for being you, for taking the time to sit down with me, and just grateful for the ways that God is using you.
Thank you so much, Adam. It was so good to chat with you.
The Conversation with Adam Weber is produced by the Converge Podcast Network and proudly distributed on Faith Radio. Special thanks to these partners. For more information on this show, visit convergepodcast.com.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network.